Morning, today's Daf and Shabbos Chaf Hey. We're on Chaf Dal Amud Beis, and we are starting this morning at the very bottom of the Amud. And the Gemara is addressing a question of the Sreifas Kachim B'Yom Tov. One is not allowed to burn Sreifas Kachim B'Yom Tov. That is a rule that was established back in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, go back to yesterday's Daf, go back to the Mishnah. Ein Malik Mishem and Sreifas B'Yom Tov. So the Mishnah opens up with a rule that one is not allowed to use your Shabbos Licht using Shem and Sreifa. And not only is that true for Shabbos Lich, but it's also true for Yontif as well. The Mishnah told us that Shem and Sreifa you're not allowed to use on Yontif. And the Mishnah is just assuming that we know that one is not allowed to burn Truma Tamea on Yontif. Burning Truma Tamea on Yontif is forbidden. Why it's forbidden? That's where the Gemara started the question yesterday. And we started, and I'm just going to go back to the Gemara, and we'll read from the Gemara, the pretty straightforward, my Taima. The Gemara says, why is it that one is not allowed to burn Truma Tamea on Yontif? Just as a brief introduction before we get into the Gemara. So we know, of course, that Truma is taken off and given to the Kohanim. Kohanim have to eat the Truma in a state of Tahara. And that means two things. One, it means that the Kohen himself has to be Tahor. And two, it means that the Truma itself also has to be Tahora. And then and only then is the Kohen allowed to eat the Truma. If the Kohen were to eat the Truma while in a state of tumah, so that would be an isser. We'll actually talk more about what exactly the isser is later on, but that is totally inappropriate. It's usher in the Torah for the truma to be eaten while in a state of tumah. When the truma does in fact become tumah, if the truma becomes tumah, so what the kohen can do is as follows: the kohen has to destroy it, but while destroying it, the kohen can get hana while destroying it. That is an assumption, and it's correct. And it's a correct assumption. Later on today, the Gemara is going to establish how we know that to be so. But it is, in fact, so. So Truma Tamea can be burned, and the Kohen can get benefit while burning the Truma Tamea. And with all that stated as an introduction, if we didn't have the Mishnah, and we didn't have the Gemara, here's what I easily could have concluded. That if, let's say, our Kohen has Truma Tamea, and it's Yontif, and he wants to light his licht for Yontif, so what he could do is he could just simply fuel his lamp with the Truma Tamea. That would seem to be very reasonable because you're allowed to get benefit from the Truma Tamea that's burning. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says you cannot do that. That's the Mishnah. Ein Madlikin v'shem tzreif b'yom tov. Good. Now, the Gemara's question is very simple. My taima. Now, what is the reason why not lefi shein tzreifim kachim b'yom tov? So the Gemara, we'll just start from the Gemara. The Gemara says because we don't burn kachim on yom tov. That is the Gemara's answer. And I made this point yesterday, but let me just reiterate. It's a really important point. And that is, we made a little leap because the Gemara over here says that you're not allowed to burn Kachim on Yontif, right? Kachim on Yontif, we're describing over here, says Rashi, says Tosfos. We're describing the Karbanos that were not offered on Yontif. Karbanos that were not offered on Yontif. So let's say you had a Karban offered the day before Yontif, and now you have leftovers of the Karban that need to be burnt, it's no star, whatever the case is. One is not allowed to burn it on Yontif. You have to wait till after Yontif to burn it. And we'll see why that is. So you're not allowed to burn Kachim on Yontif. Non-Yontif Kachim you cannot burn on Yontif. So with the leap that the Gemara is making is that you're also not allowed to burn Truma Tamea on Yontif as well. And Tosfos points out that that leap is a little bit challenging to understand. Because when it comes to Kachim, so Kachim is totally asur. Meaning it's asur b'achila, it's asur b'ana. You can't do anything with the kachim other than just simply destroy it. But when it comes to the Truma Tamea, you're allowed to get benefit from it. And if the only thing holding us back is the fact that it's yantiv, well, on yantiv we know there's a heter v'alchal nefesh, meaning you're allowed to get benefit from, you're allowed to do malachas in which you're getting hana while doing those malachas. If burning the Truma Tamea results in hana, so then it should be okay. And so Tosus over here is bothered by the fact, why did the Gemara just simply assume that just because we're not allowed to burn Kachim on Yontif also results in that the fact we're not allowed to burn Truma Tamea on Yontif because Truma Tamea, you are in fact allowed to get benefit from it. So see Tosus Divrei Maskil Lefishein Sorfim Kachim Yontif. Tosus gives two answers. He quotes the Riva, he quotes the Ri. He gives two different answers to address this question. And I will leave it off over here. But in the meantime, it's good to be aware of. The Gemara made a small jump going from Kachim to Truma Tamea. Anyway, the Gemara says, how do I know that one is not allowed to burn Kachim on Yontif? So Menahani Mili. So the Gemara is going to give no less than four different answers to this question. Number one, Amar Chizkia v'chein tanda b'chizkia amakra. Lo so sir mimenu ad boker, v'hanosar mimenu ad boker. The psukim in Parshas Bo that describe what happens if any of the Karban Pesach is left over for the morning. So Karban Pesach has to be eaten over the course of the night. and Karban Pesach, interesting Karban, in that you're only, the window of Achila for the Karban Pesach is only one night. And even that is subject to a machlokas. There is a machlokas Tanayim, whether you have the whole night to eat the Karban Pesach or you have until midnight. Rav Elazar ben Azariah says you only have up until midnight. Either way, either midnight or morning, Karban Pesach now is no longer edible, and therefore anything left over is called nosar. The Torah says in Parshas Bo, what do I do with the nosar? So lo sosir mimenu ad boker. So the first thing the Torah says is don't leave anything over. Eat all the meat of the Karban Pesach. Vahan nosar mimenu ad boker, anything left over. And the Gemara is bothered by the fact that it says the word boker two times, and that second time is unnecessary. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. She'in tam alomar ad boker, ma tam alomar ad boker. When do I burn the nosar? You do not burn the nosar on the morning of Pesach. Why? Because that's a yontif, and you're not allowed to burn kachim on yontif. If it is a non-yontif kachim, and the carbon Pesach is a non-yontif carbon, I know it's funny because it's eaten on the yontif, but it is a non-carbon yontif, and therefore the nosar that it results from the carbon Pesach is not to be burnt on yontif morning. When do you burn it? The second morning, meaning the first day of Chol HaMoed. That is the first source in the Gemara that teaches us that one is not allowed to burn kachim on Yantav. The Gemara is going to give three other sources. Abaye Amar Makra Olas Shabbos b'Shabbatov v'lo Olas Chol b'Shabbos v'lo Olas Chol b'Yomtov. The only heter of avoda that can be done on Shabbos is only a Shabbos carbon. Any carbon that is a non-Shabbos carbon cannot be burned on Shabbos. Similarly, any non-Yantav carbon cannot be burnt on Yantav. Okay, and the drasha is based on the fact that basically we assume that whatever is true by Shabbos is true by Yom Tov as well. Much that there is a heter to do the avodah on Shabbos, a heter, a mitzvah to do the avodah on Shabbos, but that's only for Shabbos-related karbanos. And on Yom Tov, the same thing. The only mitzvah is for Yom Tov-related karbanos, but any karban that is not coming as a result of Yom Tov may not be burnt on Yom Tov. That is our second source. The Gemara gives the third source. Rava Amar Amar Kro, Hu Levado Yaseh Lachem. So the pasuk back to Parshas Bo. The Torah says that only this you do for yourself, and we're darshaning now the word who? Who v'lo machshirin? In terms of the heter of ochel nefesh, that there are malachas that are allowed to be done in order so that we can eat on yontif, we can eat fresh food on yontif. And the Gemara in Beitza goes through the various malachas that one is allowed to do on yontif. So you're only allowed to do malacha on yontif that directly affects the food preparation. But if it is machshirin, if it's indirect, i.e. I don't have a knife, and can I, on Yom Tov, make a knife in order to facilitate food preparation? That's what's called machshirin, and it is a major machlokas, and the halacha is not the machshirin. I can only do malachas on Yom Tov that directly affect the food, but I cannot do machshirin. And that's the who v'lo machshirin. Livado, we're darshaning, v'lo mila shlo bizmana. And the livado tells me that if it's a mila shlo bizmana, meaning that I have an opportunity on Yom Tov to do Mila, but it's not on the right time, meaning it's not the eighth day. So Mila Shelo Bizmana is not going to be Docha Yom Tov. You have to push off the Mila till after Yom Tov. De Asya B'Kav HaChomer. Now, if I didn't have the drasha, I would have said that for sure we should have been able to do it based on a Kav HaChomer. Yesterday I said I was going to go through the Kav HaChomer. Here's what I will do today. I will point to the Rashi. And later in the Masechta, we're going to go through the Kav HaChomer in detail. Okay, that is a Bli Neder, but on Daf Kuf Lamed Beis, we're going to go through the Kav HaChomer. So rather than strain the brains right now on going through the Kav HaChomer, let's just say it succinctly, I will oversimplify. The Kav HaChomer would have led us to the conclusion that one should be doing a Mila Shelo Bizmana on Yom Tov. That is a Kav HaChomer. How we got to that Kav HaChomer, so see Rashi, we're going to go through it in detail on Kuf Lamed Beis. And therefore, I have the drasha that comes to teach me over here that even though the Kav HaChomer would have dictated that I should be able to do the Mila, nevertheless, we are not going to do the Mila Shelo Bizmana on Yom Tov. That's the conclusion. And as Rashi points out over here, and how does that have anything to do with our discussion over here? Take a look at the last line of Rashi. So, and Rashi says, V'hu adin, let's refer to Kachim Tameim. And also now, if I have Kachim that is non-Yom Tov related, It's not because of the avodas hayom. It's just simply other kachim that for whatever reason needs to be burned. Rashi here gives the example that let's say, for example, it becomes tameh. So just like Mila Shelo Bizmana cannot be performed on Yom Tov, kachim that need to be burnt but are not Yom Tov related cannot be done on Yom Tov. That's the extension, that's the leap that we made over here in this third approach. And then finally the Gemara gives us a fourth approach. As we are on the very bottom of Chavdal Medbeis, Rav Ashi Amar Shabbaton, Asay, the fact that the Torah says Shabbaton, so that introduces us to the idea that the observance of Shabbos is not just a los asay, but it's also a mitzvah asay as well. It's a positive commandment. Meaning the Torah's requirement mandate is that we must rest on that day. Rashi on the very top of Chafei Amad Aleph, Mashma Shavos Bo. We are required to rest on that day, actively rest. I know that sounds strange, but that's the idea. That's a mitzvah asay. And now Havala Yom Tov Asay Velos Asay. So that means that this is not just limited to Shabbos. It's also true by Yom Tov as well. Yom Tov now falls under the category of an asay and a los asay. Vein asay doche es los asay v'asay. And that means to say that now, even though no sar you should be burning. And not only that, it's a mitzvah to burn no sar, meaning by ish tisrofa. The Torah tells us that if no sar is left over, again, you shouldn't have left it over, but if no sar is left over, so you have a mitzvah to burn it. So over here, if you have a mitzvah to burn it, so that could be viewed, not could be, the Gemara views it as a mitzvah sese, as a positive commandment. And so what I have over here now is the positive commandment of srefa sa no sar, and then I have the negative prohibition of yantuf. What the Gemara was thinking up until this point in time is that basically I'm looking at an essay and a los assay. The essay of burning nosar, the los assay of yontif. That's what we were looking at. And generally speaking, the rule is essay docha los assay. The Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos discusses this extensively, the idea of essay being docha los assay. So over here I would have said that the burning of the nosar should override that of yontif. What Rav Ashi is addressing is yontif is not just a los assay. Yontif is also an assay. So yontif now is an assay and a los assay. So the mitzvah assay of burning nosar cannot override something which is both an assay and a los assay. And that's why it cheshbons out, it accounts out now that you cannot be burning the nosar on yontif. That is our fourth approach of the Gemara. Habichol, continuing now in the Gemara. I'm sorry, Habichol Shapir Dami. Okay, so what comes out now is that we just went through four different sources amongst the Tanayim, Amorayim, in terms of how we know that you're not allowed to burn Kachem on Yontif. And as a secondary point, which the Gemara obviously makes, is that not only you're not allowed to burn Kachem on Yontif, but you're also not allowed to burn Truma Tameah on Yontif as well. Habichol Shapir Dami. However, if it wasn't a Yontif, and if it was just a regular weekday, so a Kohen would be allowed to take his Truma Tameah and burn it, and not only burn it, but get Hana while he's burning it. And the Gemara says, good, we've been assuming that the whole time, but how do we know that's in fact so? Where in the Psukim do we get this impression that one is in fact allowed to burn a Truma Tameah and get benefit from the Truma Tameah? So my time, Amirav Kishem Shemitzvah Litzrofa Kachem Shinit Mukach Mitzvah Litzrofa Truma Shinit Meis. So the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav, that just like it's a mitzvah to burn kachem that becomes tameh, so too it's a mitzvah to burn truma that becomes tameh as well. The Amra Torah b'shas b'yoro tehaneh mimenu. And the Torah says that when you're burning the truma tameh, one is allowed to get benefit while burning it. Now the question, this didn't answer the question, it's just a restatement of the fact. Now the Gemara follows up, heichan Amra Torah. So the Gemara says, okay, good, but where did the Torah say that you are allowed to get benefit from the truma tameh? So Heichan Amar Torah, Midrav Nachman. So the Gemara here is going to be giving a number of answers to this question. One, the Gemara quotes Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Amar Krav, Ani, Hinei, Nasati Lachas, Meshmeres, Trumasai. The Torah in Parshas Korach tells us that the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Meshmeres Trumasai. The Kohanim are required to safeguard the Truma. It says it in the plural, Trumosai. B'shtei Trumas HaKasav Medar, but the Torah is talking about two different forms of Truma. Achas Truma Tahara v'Achas Truma Tameah, both Truma Tahara and Truma Tameah v'Amar Rechmana, Lecha Shelcha Tehei, Leheseka Tachash Tavshilech. And the Torah says that it belongs to the Kohen. Now Truma Tahara belongs to the Kohen, obviously, meaning that the Kohen has an obligation to eat it. So certainly if the Kohen can eat it, so that is an expression of ownership, that's for sure clear. But what does it mean Truma Tameah also belongs to the Kohen? So it belongs to the Kohen in that he can get Hana from it. He's certainly not allowed to eat it, as we pointed out, it's an Isser for him to eat it. But nevertheless, it would be it would still be his in that he could burn it and get hana from it. And hana over here in this particular memra, so it means that let's say, for example, it's olive oil, that was truma, that becomes tameh. So now he could burn it and he could use it to cook his food. So the heat that is generated from the truma tameh being burned, so that he's allowed to get benefit from that. He can cook his food with it. And lechor, in terms of hana, so you could talk about cooking, you could talk about illumination. Okay. Ibai Seima, the Gemara gives the second approach in terms of how do I know that a Kohen can get Hana from Truma Tameya. Mida Rabbi Abahu, so he learns it from Rabbi Abahu. Da Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'lo Biarti Mimenu B'Tamei Mimenu. Sorry. V'lo Biarti Mimenu B'Tamei. So we are in Parshas Kisavo, and we are by Vidui Meiser. And here in the Parsha regarding Vidui Meiser, at the end of the third year, at the end of the sixth year, so the person, the Balabais, makes an accounting of everything that he did correctly. Right? We use the word Vidui over here. Vidui does not, in this context, mean a confession of sin. But Vidui over here just simply means that it is an accounting of that which he did correctly. And the Torah goes over a number of things that were done correctly. Now, why at the end of the third year and at the end of the sixth year? Because these are good markers of the Shemitah cycle. Because the first 3 years of the Shemitah cycle, so it is going to be the first 2 years, Truma Gedola, followed then by Maaser Rishon, followed then by Maaser Sheni. In the third year, it's going to be Truma Gedola, Maaser Rishon, and Maaser Ani. And so that's the first 3 year cycle. And then a repeat again for years 4, 5, and 6. So at the end of the third year and the end of the sixth year is an excellent time for this accounting. And as part of the accounting, one of the things that he says is Lo bi'arti mimenu b'tamei, that I did not burn it while in the state of Tumah. Now, if you look contextually in the Pesukim over here, it's describing Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni cannot be burned in a state of Tumah. So Maaser Sheni, which is in the first and second year and in the fourth and fifth year, if the Maaser Sheni becomes Tameh, so it becomes totally disqualified. And you can't even burn it. Now, implied over here by the fact that the Torah says Mimenu, is that it's the Maaser Sheni that cannot be burnt in Tumah. So it sounds like, but something else can be burned b'tumah. Mimenu yatamavir, aval atamavir shemeshot truma shenitmeis. So a critical reading of the pasuk would indicate that it's the Maaser Sheni that can't be burned b'tumah, but something else, i.e. truma tamea, is allowed to be burnt b'tumah, and not only allowed to be burnt b'tumah, but you're allowed to get benefit from it while burning it. Okay, and that is the drasha. Now this drasha obviously is not a clear-cut drasha. It is a diuk, it's only by implication, but the Gemara feels that it's a strong implication. The Gemara says, the Gemara wants to test now, how strong an implication are we talking about? The aim of the Gemara says, let us suggest. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we suggest the following? The drasha would sound more like this, that I'm not allowed to burn Maaser Sheni that becomes Tamei, but you know what I am allowed to burn? I'm allowed to burn Shemen Shel Kodesh, meaning that the olive oil over here wasn't Truma, but actually belonged to Kodesh. It belonged in the Beis HaMikdash. The olive oil was set aside as part of the Nesachim. The olive oil was set aside for a Mincha. Okay, in other words, the olive oil was Kodesh, and it becomes Tameh. And maybe the drasha is that I can't burn Maaser Sheni and get benefit from it, but I'm allowed to burn olive oil that's Kodesh, and that becomes Tameh, and I'm allowed to get benefit from it. Isn't that the implication? So, lav kavachomer hu. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If we think about it for just a moment, that doesn't make any sense. Ma maaser akal amra Torah lo biarti mimenu b'tameh kodesh chamor l'kol shekein. The Gemara says, if you think about it rationally, it doesn't make any sense. If one cannot burn maaser sheni, now maaser sheni is kal. It's extraordinarily lenient. Let's just talk about how this is reflected in halacha, that maaser sheni is lenient. Maaser sheni cannot be eaten by somebody who's tamei, but in terms of when can a person eat maaser sheni, so maaser sheni can be eaten immediately after he tovels in the mikvah, even though he's a tvul yom. He's a tvul yom, and he's not allowed to eat truma, but nevertheless, immediately after you tovel in the mikvah, you can eat maaser sheni. Now, that's not true by truma. By truma, you can only eat the truma only after you experience Erev Shemesh. And by the way, when it comes to carbon, you can't eat carbon until you bring your carbonus the next day. So you see that Maaser Sheni is kal. And also on top of that, the obvious point is that Maaser Sheni can be eaten by anybody. Truma can only be eaten by Kohanim. Anyway, but Maaser Sheni is kal. And if Maaser Sheni cannot be burnt and Hana received from the burning, so it goes without saying then that Kodesh also cannot be burnt while Tameh, and you can get benefit from the burning. So the Gemara says, Yihachi Trumanami. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a wonderful Kavachomer. I'll use the same Kavachomer for Truma. Lema Kavachomer hu. So the Gemara says, say the same exact Kavachomer. So, and that is that if I can't burn Maaser Sheni and get benefit while burning it, well, I can't burn Truma and get benefit while burning it. Truma is on a higher level of Kedusha than that of Maaser Sheni. And if Maaser Sheni cannot get benefit from it when it's in a state of Tumah, the same thing is true by Truma as well. So this Kal Vachomer that we just made to Kachim should also be true by Truma as well. And the Gemara says, so what do you have to say about that? Haksiv Mimenu. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but we also have the word Mimenu. And the word Mimenu means from it, meaning that the Torah is giving a clear declaration that there is something else that I'm allowed to burn while in the state of Tumah and get benefit from it. So the Torah is going out of its way to state that there is something out there that I can burn and get benefit from, even though I'm not allowed to eat it. And the only question now is, what are we talking about? So, well, we know the answer. We're talking about Truma, we're not talking about Kachim, but the Gemara wants to go into its classic discussion of how do I know? Uma Reisa, what made you so convinced that it should apply to Truma Tameya and it should not apply to Kachim Tameya? Uma Reis, Mistaba Kodesh Lo Mimatina, Shekain Siman, Panak Akas. Pigle, no sir, carbon, Mi'ila Kares, Aser La'onein. So the Gemara points out that when it comes to Kachim, there are six chumras, there are six stringencies that apply to a carbon that we don't have by Truma. And so this six stringencies speak to the idea that a carbon is really serious in that it has six chumras to it. And quickly, let's run through what these six chumras are. I'm going to look at it through Rashi, Shekain. Rashi is well above where we are in the Gemara. Rashi, Divrei HaMaskil, Shekain. Rashi says, Yesh bo chumrei panak akas. V'rai gam lezu chayev l'mishom, pegol. And we're going to go through each one of them. First, we'll start with the pei. The pei is pegol, says Rashi. Shachat, I'm sorry, before we get to the shin. Pegol, of course, means that when I have a carbon, where the Kohen, when shechting the carbon, thinks about how the carbon is going to be consumed, either chutzus mano or chutzum komo. So now he has rendered the carbon disqualified. The disqualification of the carbon is referred to as pigel. And so therefore, when somebody now subsequently eats this carbon, he's subject to the kari's penalty. So this you have by kachim. You do not have this by truma. That's number one. Number two, shachat al menas lechol. Rashi here is explaining pigel. Shachat al menas lechol chutzus mano. Va'achal afilu bezmano mishim nosar. Now we're up to the nun. Rashi explains that the nun over here is a reference to nosar. Nosar, if I leave over any of the carbon, any consumption of that leftover carbon is subject to the kari's penalty. This is something you have by carbonus. You do not have this by truma. That is nosar. Chutzus mano mamish velo chasha mitchila v'kari carbon. On top of that, a carbon also is given the name carbon. The name carbon, which gives it a level of kedusha, and truma is not described in using the terms carbon. V'yesh bo mi'ila. And and there is also a din of mi'ila. V'af agav shekodesh la'achilas kohanim ein bahem mi'ila mikol makom toras mi'ila sheichabei. Now Rashi over here gets a little bit technical, meaning that the mi'ila as it relates to a carbon is not always true, meaning there are many times when you're allowed to eat a carbon. But nevertheless, toras mi'ila, meaning that a carbon is eligible for mi'ila, and that's, of course, not true by truma. So, im kachim kadashim hen yesh me'ila min mezirka, l'chol hanena mihem. V'im kachim kalim hen yesh me'ila bi'imerim la'achar zrikas damim. La'fuke truma deleis be'klal. Okay, so Rashi over here just goes over the details of mi'ila. Mi'ila applies by a carbon. If it's kachim kadashim, the mi'ila applies to the carbon prior to shechita. If the mi'ila is talking about kachim kalim, it applies to the imurim la'achar shechita. Now, if you didn't understand that, that's fine. Okay, these are just basic rules regarding mi'ila. The simple way to understand it over here is just simply that by carbon it is subject to mi'ila, and by truma there is no concept of mi'ila. And by the way, once you violate the isra of mi'ila, eating a carbon that you are not supposed to eat, so you have to pay, you have to make full restitution, plus you also have to add a chomesh, plus you also have to bring a carbon asham mi'ila for violating the isra of mi'ila. And again, that's not true by truma. Okay, and we have just covered now the pei, the nun, the kuf was a carbon, the ayin is mi'ila, we have two more to go. Rashi, continuing in Rashi, v'kareis la'ochla b'tumas aguf, v'truma b'misa b'dei shamayim, yamim niksarim aval eino holech ariri. Rashi says that in terms of punishment, there's a difference between a tummy person eating kachim and a tummy person eating truma tameya. A tummy person eating kachim, the punishment is kareis. And the tummy person eating truma, the punishment is going to be Misa B'dei Shamayim. And Rashi over here very succinctly writes that although they both are serious, as these are punishments that are coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's still going to be a difference when it comes to Kares. So Rashi describes over here it affects you and your children. But when it comes to Misabidei Shemayim, it only affects you. It does not affect your children. Okay, if I can explain that any better, I certainly would. But the but there is a level of differentiation between between Kares and Misabidei Shemayim. Misabidei Shemayim is a drop lower than that of Kares. Okay, and again, that is now a fifth way in which we see that Kachim is on a higher level than that of Truma. And finally, last is Asur La'onein. This is the of the Rashi Tevos. This is the Samech. So Asur La'onein, Kavachomer Mimaiser. So when it is prohibited for an onein is not allowed to eat Maiser Sheni, an onein is also not allowed to eat Kachim. Ava Truma Muter La'onein B'Yavamos Beperka Arel. But the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that an onein kohen is allowed to eat truma. The Gemara in Yevamos discusses this in detail. So what we have over here are six ways in which we saw that kachim is on a higher level than that of truma. And so therefore, when the Torah over here says that I didn't eat from the Maaser Hasheni Hakal, but mi menu, but something else I'm allowed to, and the choice now is between truma and kachim, and what can I burn and get benefit from? So it would seem like truma, because kachim has many more chumras. The Gemara, however, pushes back, and the Gemara tries to argue in the other direction. We are now going back to the Gemara, and the Gemara says, "Kodesh lo mimat shkeni." I'm sorry, siman panakakas pigol no sur karba miila kares aser lo onein. Sorry, second to last line on the bottom. Ad the Rabba. So now the Gemara argues in the other direction. Truma. Lo mimatna shekein machpaz siman misa chomesh ein lapijon and asur lazarim. So the Gemara says, okay, but by truma also we have four stringencies by truma that you don't have by carbon. And what are these four stringencies? So we'll take a look at Rashi machpaz. So the Rashi Tevas mem ches pei zayin. So we'll start with number one. Misa b'dei shamayim lazar ha'ochla al kohen tamei v'chomesh. Sorry, so Misa B'dei Shamayim. So Misa B'dei Shamayim is unique to Truma. Now, it's a little bit hard to understand how the Gemara is arguing at this point, because we just established that Misa B'dei Shamayim is lower than that of Kares. But still, it's something which it's unique by Truma. Number two says, Rashi, Chomesh Lezar Ha'ochla B'shogeg Dichsiv Ki Yochol Kodesh B'shkagav Yasef Chamesh Yisoh Alav Ava Kodesh Mishah Sheyesh Hetel L'Kohanim K'Truma V'yetze Midei Mi'ilo Shuv Ein Chomesh B'shikgas Achila So. As far as Chomesh is concerned, so we know that when someone inadvertently eats Truma, so he must pay Chomesh. Now, there is a Chomesh by Mi'ila, but Rashi says, but that's true. But still, as it relates to Truma, it's still a unique halacha within Truma. Because unlike Kodesh, when it comes to Truma, so at any point in time, any non-Kohen who eats the Truma is going to be subject to a Chomesh. And that's not but true by Kachim. By Kachim, you don't always have the Chomesh penalty. So in this regard, Chomesh is more going to be more chamer by Truma than it is by Kachim. And Rashi goes on, Rashi gives an alternative shot, but as we now turn the page to go over the other two, Ein La Pidyon, top Rashi on the Amud Beis, Rashi says, Lo Tzia L'chulin, Truma is non-redeemable. There is under no circumstances can Truma be redeemed. Ava Kodesh, Rashi says, Yesh Kodesh and Ifta Kagon, Shumam Lefnei Shechita. Let's say a carbon becomes a blemished carbon before it was shechted. So then it's subject to pidyon. You could redeem a carbon under certain circumstances. And finally, Asur Lazarim, La'olam. Truma can be eaten by a non-Kohen. Never. A non-Kohen can never eat Truma. Ava Kodesh, Rashi goes on to describe, Yesh Kodesh, Shemut Lazarim, Lachar Zrika, Kagon Maiser Behema, Vitoda, Vishlamim. But there are many carbonates that can be eaten by non-Kohanim. So you see that you have certain chumras that you have by truma that you don't have by carbon. And so, this is a classic discussion of the Gemara, in that I have an opportunity to give a leniency to either kachim or to truma. The leniency is going to be that if it becomes tameh, I can burn it and get benefit from it while burning it. And this leniency is either going to be applicable to either kachim or to truma. Which one is it going to be applicable to? And the Gemara goes through its classic discussion of, well, which one of them has more chumras? And the Gemara therefore concluded that kachim has more chumras, six. Truma only has four chumras, so it's 6-4. And basically, at the end of the game, the Gemara makes exactly this point. So the Gemara says, hanach nefishin. So the Gemara says, when all said and done, so there are more chumras by kachim than there is by truma. So if we have a kula to extend, we're going to extend it now to truma, which has fewer of the leniencies. Additionally, the Gemara says, Yibayisema kodesh chamor, Shekeinah Nushkaris. Or the Gemara says that ultimately, when all said and done, the argument ender is the punishment that comes along that's associated with kachim over that of truma. For truma, it's misa b'dei shemayim. For kachim, it is kares. And so therefore, the punishment of kares is just simply a more serious punishment. And that ultimately will determine that kachim is more chamor. And so therefore, the leniency of you can burn and get hana from it is all going to be generated from the fact that the punishment for truma is not karis. It's only misa b'dei shamayim. I say only from a relative standpoint. That is a very long sentence that we just completed. And so, the question on the table was, how do I know that I can burn truma tamea, the kohen can burn truma tamea and get benefit while burning it, benefiting from its either illumination or from the heat that's generated in terms of cooking his food? So the Gemara now has arrived so far at two approaches. The first approach is Mishmeres Trumasai, that was the first drasha, or the second drasha of Lo Biyarti Mimenu B'Tamei, although this one was a little bit complex, as it's a diuk, and it's just a question of how we arrived at the conclusion based on the diuk. And finally, the Gemara is going to give a third approach, Rav Nachman or Yitzhak Amar Kra, Titein Lo, Lo V'Lo La Oro, Michlal Debas Orohu. So the Gemara says that when there's a mitzvah for a balabai is to give truma to the Kohen, so the Torah says, titein lo, make sure to give him, the Kohen, the truma. And what is the drasha of titein lo? That you must give Kohen something that he himself can consume. Titein lo, velo la oro. Meaning that one is not lechatchila allowed to be mafrish food which is tamei. Meaning that if the balabais has the opportunity to be mafrish tahora or tamea, so it behooves the balabais to be mafrish tahora and not tamea. So that when in fact he gives the truma over to the kohen, he's going to be giving something to the kohen that the kohen can consume and eat. But what the balabais is not allowed to do is give him truma tamea, because that only would be la'oro. The kohen can only get benefit from it vis-a-vis its illumination, but not in terms of its consumption. And the implication, and the Gemara makes exactly this point, michlal de basarohu, meaning by virtue of the fact that the Torah is giving directive for the Baal Bayis to give, make sure to be mafresh tahora, not tamea, but implied in this instruction is that if it was tamea and if it was given to the Kohen, so then the Kohen can make usage of it for the light, for the illumination. Okay, so a third possible approach in terms of how we know that the Kohen is in fact allowed to get benefit from truma tamea. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, we're going back now to our Mishnah that we learned in yesterday's daf. The Mishnah started off Ein Malikim Mishnah Mitzrayim for B'Yom Tov. We just finished the entire sugya of the Gemara, describing the first memra, the first psak of the Mishnah, that you're not allowed to burn Shem Mitzrayim for Yom Tov. We just went through the entire discussion of how we know that, and then continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Ein Malikim Be'Itran Mipnei Kavod Shabbos. One is not allowed to burn with Itran because of Kavod Shabbos. So, it produces a foul odor. Rashi in the Mishnah said that itran is psulta de zifta, some sort of residue of the pitch. And when it's burned, so it's got a foul odor to it, and the Gemara's follow-up question to the Mishnah is, my taima. Okay, so it's got a foul odor to it, and so therefore what? Amar Rav mitoch sherech harag, zera shami yinichenu, v'yetze. So, the Rav explains that what happens is that if it's producing a foul odor, so what everyone's going to do is that everyone's going to start really being uncomfortable by the foul odor produced by the Shabbos licht, and they're going to leave the table. Gemara is going to ask this question only so that it can provide the answer. Amalei Abai v'yetze. So Abai says, okay, so everyone leave the table. Okay, no one violated a malacha, meaning if the issue is shemayata, that I might tilt over the lamp, so then we're talking about the violation of a malacha. But if over here everyone's just leaving the table, okay, that's not the best thing, but no malacha has been violated. So I'm relay shani omer hadlakas ner b'shabbos chova. So the response is, no, you don't understand. If you're lighting the Shabbos licht, then everyone leaves the table, so it undercuts the entire purpose of lighting Shabbos licht, meaning that the Chachamim instituted Shabbos licht as a chova, as an obligation. Rashi, chova, kavod Shabbosu she'ein su'uda chashuva ela b'makom or. What the light does is that it makes the meal into a significant meal. Ke'en yamama beperek basra diyuma. It's like now a daytime meal. So now that the meal is considered a chash of a meal, by virtue of the fact that there's light over there, and if you light the Shabbos licht only so that everyone will make an exit away from the table because of the foul odor, So you've undercut the entire purpose of why Shabbos Lich was instituted to begin with. And so therefore, you want a light using a flame, using a fuel that is not going to drive people away from the table. Amar Rav Nachman bar Rav Zavdav Amrila, Amar Rav Nachman bar Rav Amar Rav Hadlakas Ner b'Shabbos Chova. So the Gemara says that the lighting of Shabbos, a light on Shabbos, is considered a Chova. Chova, again, in the context of the Gemara over here, Chova meaning it's part and parcel of the covered Shabbos. It is the honoring of the Shabbos in doing so, and the honoring of the Shabbos meal. And you want the meal to be accompanied by Shabbos Licht. Certainly our Gemara over here, it's a pretty easy conclusion to draw. Our Gemara over here speaks about also where it is critical to be lighting your Shabbos Licht. You should be lighting your Shabbos Licht proximate to the table in which you're eating from, meaning that is part and parcel of the main focus, the main purpose of lighting the Shabbos Licht. Okay, it certainly serves sometimes as a problem when staying elsewhere, and you don't have easy access to light within the dining room. But nevertheless, though, the Ikar Halacha is certainly clear from the Gemara over here that you should be lighting near or literally on the dining room table. So the near Shabbos Chova. Back to the Gemara, Rechitzas Yadayim V'Raglayim B'Chamin Arvis Rishus. So, Rav says that he had as a tradition that the washing of one's hands and feet in warm water is a Rishus, meaning it's something which is certainly recommended, but it's not an absolute obligation. V'ani Omer Mitzvah. He says, but you know what? I would say that it's not just a Rishus, but rather it's a Mitzvah. My Mitzvah. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Kachayim Menhago Shel Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. This was the practice of Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. So Erev Shabbos Mevi'in Lo Areva Maleh Chamin. That comes Erev Shabbos, so what was brought to him was a bowl of warm or hot water. V'rochitz Panav Yadav V'raglav. And he would wash his hands, feet, and face. Let me go in the right order. He would wash his face, his hands, his feet. U'misatev Yoshev B'sadim N'hamitziyatzim. And not only that, but he would be wrapped up in a talus. Now, the interesting thing over here is that the tradition that we have is that the talus was made up of linen, meaning the beged itself was made up of linen, and the strings themselves, the tzitzis themselves, are made up of wool, which gets us to the topic of shatnez. We'll come back to that point in just a moment. V'domo l'malach Hashem tzvakos, and he looked like an angel. V'ayu talmid of mechabim mimenu kanfik susam. And when the students try to copy and emulate that which the Rebbe did, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai did, so what they would do is they would cover up their tzitzis. And Amar lehem b'ni lo kach shanisi lechem. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says to the students, I don't understand. Meaning you have a beged of linen, and you have the tzitzis which is made up of wool, and they're tied together, and it's shatnis, and it's totally fine. Sadim b'tzitzis b'shamay pocher me'besil mechayven. So we have a debate, and we're going to see this in the beginning of Yavamos extensively, and between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai is of the opinion that when you have a linen garment, it is exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis. Beis Hillel is of the opinion that when you have a linen garment, it's obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. And the basis of the obligation I'll come back to in just a moment. V'halacha g'divrei Beis Hillel. And the halacha falls like Beis Hillel. And so therefore, Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai says to the students, wearing a linen garment and attaching the wool tzitzis to the linen garment is not controversial. It is, but the halacha psukah is like Beis Hillel, and so therefore it is totally legitimate in which on that which I'm doing. And so he tells the students that you are within perfect right to copy and emulate my actions. Now the inhu. Now the Gemara points out in terms of the students, what are they? What was their hesitation? So they thought that there was a rabbinic ban on putting tzitzis on a linen garment, meaning they agreed principally with the Rebbe that there is a mitzvah and a chiyuv to put the wool tzitzis on the linen garment, and they agreed that the halacha does in fact fall like Beis Hillel, but they were concerned that the rabbis made a gzera that one is not allowed to do so. Now, why did the rabbis make such a gzera? Because of tzitzis laila. So let's go step by step and explain many of the points that are raised over here regarding the controversial practice of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai putting on the wool tzitzis on a linen garment. So first and foremost, the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of whether it's exempt or whether it is obligated in tzitzis. Rashi over here writes, the Beis Shammai potrim, v'af agav tzitzis chovahu b'chol taliso sheyesh lo la'adam v'afilu munachim b'kufsa. So even though there's a mitzvah to put tzitzis on all your corner garments, and even the ones that you're not currently wearing, Hanu de pishtam peturim mishum de klayim lo shara rachmanu de lo darshi smuchin. However, according to Beis Shammai is of the opinion that when you have a linen garment, you cannot tie on the wool strings. The assumption is that the strings that you attach are always going to be made out of wool. Why is that an assumption? Because we know that of the wool strings, one or two of them is going to be dyed blue. And we also have a tradition, Halach L'Moshe Misina, that the ones that are dyed blue are for sure going to be made out of wool. The tchelis is going to be imra, it's going to be wool. And so therefore, when I'm tying the wool strings onto a linen garment, so I'm violating the Isra of Shatnez. Now, in the psukim in Parshas Kisetze, so you have two psukim juxtaposed one next to the other. You have the pasuk of Gedilim Tasalach, the mitzvah of putting your tzitzis on a garment, and you also have right next to it the pasuk of Shatnez, Lo Yuba Shatnez. And if you darshan smuchim, so that means to say that what the Torah is allowing you to do is have the mitzvah of tzitzis override the Isser of Shatnez. What Rashi over here explains is that Beis Shammai does not subscribe to smuchim. Now, there's a lot of discussion about this Rashi over here, but nevertheless, that's the way Rashi presents it. And so that means to say that according to Rashi, so Beis Shammai does not darshan smuchin, and so therefore there is no heter to put tzitzis on a shatnez garment. Which means to say that if by putting tzitzis on you're creating shatnez, you're not allowed to put tzitzis on. That is shitas Beis Shammai. And Beis Hillel, on the other hand, he does darshan smuchin. Rashi, next Rashi, Beis Hillel mechayven, darshan smuchin. Beis Hillel darshan smuchin, and so therefore the mitzvah of tzitzis is going to be able to override the iser of shatnez. Fine. Very good. So that's the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as explained by Rashi. Next, what about the Chachamim Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai, who although are in agreement that we do paskin like Beis Hillel, but nevertheless still feels that one is not allowed to put on the wool tzitzis on a linen garment. So look at the next Rashi. V'inu savre tamidav shayu osrim. The students who said that it was aser. Even though the halacha does fall like Beis Hillel, but what the Chachamim were concerned is the following. Let's say you have a garment that is exclusively used at night, what in halacha is referred to as a ksus laila. Maybe you have a garment that is designated specifically for night, what you and I would refer to maybe as pajamas. And now what comes out is that you're now wearing kalayim. Shalom b'makom mitzvah d'ksus layel amechay b'tzitzis d'chsiv v'risam oso. Uvi yavamos parchin. I'm sorry, before I get to the Gemara in Yavamos. So there is an exception where anything which is ksus layel is not obligated in tzitzis. So here we have a four-corner garment, but because it's ksus layel, it therefore is not subject to the tzitzis obligation. And if I put tzitzis on it, there's no mitzvah of tzitzis, and now there's an isra of kalayim. And so what the students thought is that because of this possibility, the Chachamim made a general gzera that one is never allowed to put the wool tzitzis on a linen garment. Now, Rashi continues, V'yavamos parchin v'chi beizim masan la'akor davar min ha-Torah, liftor es ha-chayiv. And the Gemara in Yavamos asks the obvious question, meaning what the Chachamim just did is they just removed the mitzvah d'oraisa. Meaning that min ha-Torah, if it's not a ksus layla, so that means it's obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. And what the Chachamim now mandated, because of a concern, is that you're not going to put tzitzis on it? So that's extraordinarily strange. And mishani sheva al tase shani. But the Gemara says, yeah, but that's sheva al tase. Meaning that the Chachamim have the ability, lakor davar min ha-Torah b'sheva al tase. They can uproot something in the Torah as long as it does not require an action. And if they're passively telling you to refrain from putting tzitzis on such a garment, that is an inaction, that's passive, and that is within the rubric of the Chachamim where they can legislate, even though in doing so they're uprooting something, a davar min ha-Torah. Okay. That's a mouthful. Okay, back to the Gemara. Okay, and I know, right, I know if we were all sitting together, I know I would be getting the question of how can Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai not be concerned of this Gzera D'Rabbanan, and the students are worried about this Gzera D'Rabbanan, and doesn't the Rebbe dictate that there is no such Gzera D'Rabbanan? And I will give you my standard answer of, I don't know. Continuing in the Gemara, V'tiznach mishalom nashi, nashisi tova, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Eicha. And the Pasuk in Eicha says that I have forsaken mishalom nashi, the serenity of my soul. And nashisi tova, and I've forgotten all good. And the Gemara now darshans the pasuk my v'tiznach mishalom l'shiyam rabbi avozer lakas ner b'shabbos. When have I lost my serenity? So that's in the absence of halakas ner, because halakas ner is there for shalom bayis, it's for serenity. And ishisi tovan, I forgot all that's good. Am rabbi yirmiyah zu beis amerchatz. So that's going and taking a wonderfully good bath. That's the tov. Zu rechitzas yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin. Washing your hands and your feet in warm water. Rabbi Yitzhak Nach Amr Zumita Na Bekelem Naim Shalaha. Rabbi Abba Omer Zumita Mutsas Veisha Mekusheset Latamid Chachamim. And the Gemara gives other examples of Nishisi Tova, that which I have forgotten good. A good bed, nice clothing. Rabbi Abba said, a good bed, a woman adorned for her husband. So these are examples of the Nishisi Tova that's described in the Pasuk in Eicha. Tanu Rabbanan, just quickly finishing up the daf. Ezu Ashir Kol Sheyesh Lo Nachas Ruach Ba'Ashro Div Rebbe Meir. So Ezu Ashir, who is a wealthy man? Really interesting Rashi over here. Ezu Ashir, Rashi says, Nafkamina Lemitrach Ladure Amilsa. Let's say it is a goal for somebody to become wealthy. Now it's interesting because that isn't necessarily a goal, or that doesn't normally seem like something that we would make as a goal. But if somebody were to make that as a goal, so at what point in time can he say that he's reached at the point of Ashiras? So Rav Meir's answer is the one that we are used to hearing. Now, of course, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, sounds very similar to this, Ezu Ashir, Hasamech V'chalko. So the way we have it over here in this Braisa, it's slightly different, but the same basic idea. Kol Sheyesh Lo Nachas Ruach B'Ashro. Anyone who is happy with the amount that he already has, so that is the Ashir. Simen Mem Tes Kuf Samach. The Gemara gives us a simanim to help us try to commit to memory the upcoming statements. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Kol Sheyesh Lo Kuf Karamim Umeyas Ados VeKuf Avadim SheOvdim Behem. So Rabbi Tarfon actually gives a portfolio of what it would look like for somebody to be wealthy, which at which point in time now he could say that he's arrived at the point of Osher, and that is that you have 100 vineyards and 100 fields and 100 slaves that are working the working it. Okay, and of course, it's a little bit strange to understand. Meaning, is there any way that you can argue with Rav Meir? And presumably the answer is yes. But it's a little bit strange that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is not a unanimous viewpoint, and the viewpoint of Rav Meir over here is not a unanimous viewpoint. But there actually is a point of debate on this issue. Rabbi Kiva Amar Kol Sheyesh Lo Isha Bema'asim. Rabbi Kiva says that the wealthy man is somebody who has a wife who is pleasant in good actions. Rabbi Yossi Amar Kol Sheyesh Lo Beisakisa Samach L'Shulchano. And Rabbi Yossi says that anyone who has a bathroom that's proximate to his table. And at the end of Brachos, we discussed extensively the value and the advantages of having a bathroom that is right next to your table. We'll stop over here, and let's just quickly recap our day. Most of today's daf was dedicated to the first statement of the Mishnah. The Mishnah going back on Chavdal Amid Beis, Ein Malik Mishrei Mitzrayfa B'Yamto, that one is not allowed to light using Truma Tamea on Yontav as your Yontav Licht. And why should that be the case? And the reason why is because Ein Sorfin Kachim B'Yontav, one is not allowed to burn Kachim on Yontav. And what the Gemara did and what we spent most of our day discussing is, how do I know that you're not allowed to burn Kachim and Truma on Yontav, Truma Tamea on Yontav? And for that, we gave four different sources in terms of how we know that this is in fact the case. It led us to the Gemara's question of, if it's not a yontif, it's a regular weekday, and the Kohen has in his possession Truma Tameya, he is allowed to burn it and get benefit while burning it, using it for its illumination, using it for its heat in order to fuel and to cook his food. So that the Kohen is allowed to do, and how do we know that? And the Gemara gave us three sources in terms of how we know that in general a Kohen is allowed to burn and get benefit from his Truma Tameya. The Amud Beis today, we discussed some of the most basic topics. Number one, the idea that the lighting of the Shabbos licht is a chova, it's an obligation. And as Rashi explained, it's part and parcel of Kavod Shabbos, it's the honoring of Shabbos, that the Suda becomes now Suda Cheshuva as it's accentuated with the Shabbos licht. And this Rashi over here clearly speaking to the idea that the Shabbos licht should be proximate to the dining room table, as the function of the Shabbos licht is there to accentuate and make the Friday night meal a significant and important meal. The Gemara goes over the minhag of Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai in terms of how he would get ready for the Shabbos, And as part of his ritual, he would put on Sadina Mitzuyatzim, and that led to a little bit of a debate between him and his students in terms of whether or not that was appropriate behavior or not appropriate behavior. We went through that this morning. And finally, we ended off today by quoting the Pasuk in Eicha, Vatiznach Mishalom Nafshi, Nafshi Sitova, and we went through the possible understandings of what does the Pasuk in Eicha mean in terms of us forgetting our serenity and us forgetting good. And the Gemara, as a byproduct of this, also discussed in terms of Ashirus, what was the definition of Ashirus.